This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
Good morning, Melbourne. This is The Escape Hour on Joy 94.9. It's a gorgeous Sunday morning. And quite frankly, we're just glad to be here, aren't we, guys?
Super glad to be here. Yep. I am always interested in talking about travel. I personally think I miss my calling. That's why I do a travel show, because I'm not in the travel industry.
We'd love to have you in your travel industry.
I would. I'm going to retire from my job and go and work for a travel agent. I'll come work for you, Russ.
Well, we're recruiting travel agents
are
now.
Are you?
Fiona, so
excellent.
Anytime you'd like to, you know, change jobs. We often get what are called familiarisations.
I'm familiar with familiarisations.
And this is where I'll bring Dave back in, because he's about to go on a familiarisation.
Excellent, yeah, Dave.
What is a familiarisation?
Well, it's called a junket. What we do is we get suppliers who give us little handouts, and we say, sure, I'll go to
Botswana
and look at the wildlife, and sure, you can pay for it, and yeah, sure, I'd like to stay in that, you know, that $10,000 lodge that I'd never be able to afford. So yeah, they're very nice, these junkets. They really are.
Yeah.
So before the break, we were talking about South Africa, Botswana, and Namibia. I think there's some train trips around there as well that people can do. Is that right? Or do you know?
You can do like the Blue Train in South Africa. That's a very high upper class sort of train journey. I haven't been on it myself, but
very posh, though.
Yeah, it's almost like South Africa's version of the Ghan.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you can do something called the Shongololo train, which is
I think that's what I was thinking about.
So it's a 2-week train trip, and basically what they do is they have all of these carriages on the train, and then they pop little minivans on. So it goes from can go from Cape Town to Joburg or Johannesburg to Dar es Salaam, and they travel at night. To each station, and then they arrive in the morning. They take the minivans off, and you scoot off and do your wildlife viewing and your safaris during the day, and then you hop back on the train and away you go.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah.
I just like saying it, the Shongololo.
Shongololo, yes.
We're going to Shongololo. We could make a song, a new track.
We love it when you sing. We really do. Anyway, junkets. We're on to junkets.
Oh, yes, Shongololo.
So could you organise one of these junkets for Fiona train?
Once she started working for us, we'd love to.
But surely there must be a pecking order in the agency.
Well, he's next, unfortunately. Oh. Dave's next, so we do have to, yeah. So where are you going, Dave?
So Cuba. I'm going to Cuba first off, and then Canada for a few days after that. But Cuba's the main objective on this junket.
Fantastic.
Always wanted to go.
Yeah, I'm very, very excited. It's sort of slowly starting to catch up with the rest of the world, so now is the time to go to Cuba while it's still back in the Cold War era of the 50s.
Yeah, before they get all of the, you know, mainstream brands that are there with their blazing signs.
Yeah, that's right.
But those old cars, remember those old 50 cars?
The Yank Tanks, they call them.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was thinking, I met someone who had been to Cuba, and they said, you know, obviously Havana is beautiful and they had a lot of fun in Havana and that was all fine. But once you kind of stepped out of Havana, it sort of seemed a bit risky in some places. Are you going to be getting out of Havana?
We will be getting out of Havana, yeah. I guess the poverty side of it is more obvious outside of Havana, which is, I guess, to be expected in a lot of developing countries. So we'll be spending a bit of time like in the near the tobacco plantations in Vinales, a small town of Trinidad as well, which is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Mm-hmm. So there's plenty to see outside of Havana. You wouldn't want to spend all your time there. Mm. But yeah, in terms of it being risque, I mean, Cuba is a very strictly controlled police state, so there's not too much to worry about in terms of crime, I wouldn't have thought.
Right.
And guess what, Fee's taking his brand new girlfriend with him, so it's a new...
Ooh.
That's right, so a bit of a treat for the new girlfriend, so she'll be a keeper after she's been to Cuba with him, I'm sure.
Well, I guess you don't know someone till you travel with them, do you?
That's right,
They keep telling me, yeah.
Yes. Well, I hope she's not a vegetarian, because I think the vegetarian offerings in Cuba are a little thin on the ground.
Yeah, that's true. Thankfully, no, she's not. She's okay. A carnivore.
Okay, well, there you go. You'll have an amazing time.
Cuba brings to mind beaches, cigars, rum, and I guess, dancing. I bet you'll be doing all of those things. Well, there's no Shongololo in Cuba, but, we could probably open up a Shongololo there, couldn't we?
Well, you could just sing the song and dance around and move your hips. You'll have a great time.
Well, you're going to be able to bring some cigars back for everybody.
Oh, is that absolutely allowed?
Yes, that is allowed. You can bring home cigars, yeah. You'd be silly not to if you're going to Cuba.
Excellent work.
And while you're there, you can bring back 3 black men for us. I think that'd be great, wouldn't it? And so then from Cuba, you'll be heading up to Toronto, which is basically the Melbourne of Canada, isn't it?
Yes. I've been there before to Toronto. That time of year, though, February, it's going to be very cold. So it'll be interesting going from the nice, warm, tropical weather in Cuba to the freezing sub-zero temperatures in Toronto in the space of a day.
So have you been to Toronto in the winter before or not? So it's the first time in the winter.
I have, yeah.
So what is there to do there in the winter? What would you recommend people do?
There's a lot of ice hockey for one thing.
Yep.
But there's a lot of public festivals going on, especially around the Christmas period. Not as much February. February it can get to about minus 20. So
there's a network of underground, a bit like Montreal, where you've got loads of underground things where you can go from one place to the other without really going out in the street.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, so you can. And a lot of above ground shopping malls which connect with each other as well. So you don't spend a lot of time outside. But it can be an exciting time to go, and obviously Niagara Falls just nearby. Yes. While you can't actually do a boat tour there, it's quite fascinating seeing the falls frozen over. It's it's not a sight you get to see many places in the world,
and not in Australia, that's for sure.
Yeah,
that's right. Beautiful light show on the waterfalls in Niagara when they're frozen. So it is quite spectacular to go down there and see all these beautiful lights over the falls and everything. So now to get to Cuba is a bit of a milk run, though, isn't it? Because of old Trumpty Dumpty, you can't fly via the USA, can you?
So. Well, I don't think you've ever been able to fly because it was only recently that they allowed Americans to get into Cuba.
Correct.
Yep. So the only people that flew down there were locals, people that were Cuban that wanted to go there.
Yeah, they had a list of reasons why you had to go there. You had to be part of a tour group or a... Dave, you know more about this, or an educational tour.
There's a list of about 12 different categories which allow you to travel between the US and Cuba. Mm-hmm. The main one that you would use is support for the Cuban people, which is essentially a fancy way of saying I'm a tourist, but I'm doing my bit to help the Cuban tourism industry. Yeah.
So how's your milk run flight going to be? Where are you going?
Oh, it's going to be fun. So Melbourne to Vancouver, a good 15 hours there, and then another 5 hours or so Vancouver to Toronto, and then another 3.5 from Toronto to Havana. So, obviously with transits in between, that's a long day.
31 hours, I think you'll be exhausted by the time you get there.
That's hardcore. But, if you want to go, you want to travel, you want to do the experience. I wonder, is there a way that you can get to Cuba from, say, South America or Mexico? Couldn't you fly to Mexico first?
You could fly to, you could fly Melbourne to LA and then LA to Mexico and then across that way. So
Santiago
in Chile, and then you could fly up to Lima and then onto Cuba. So there's quite a few ways.
From Peru, from Panama, there's plenty of ways to get there.
But either way,
via the US, you just have to go somewhere else first.
Yeah. Either way, it's got a few stops.
Yeah, you're not going to get there too easily.
What sort of cocktail do you think they'll have there?
Well, the national drink is the mojito.
Oh, is it?
Yeah,
okay.
And the Cuba Libre is the other one.
Okay.
Which is just rum and coke, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it? Is it really?
It's a fancy way of saying rum and coke.
But their rum and their coke is just so much better.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure. I'm not saying it's wrong.
I'm sure it's much stronger, isn't it?
Yeah. Probably.
Yeah, I would say. Well, land of rum, it must be.
So you could bring us back some rum as well.
Oh, no, I'll be having all the rum. That's all for me.
Yes, there are limits to the amount of alcohol you can bring back, unfortunately.
2 litres.
I know.
That's a lot, isn't it?
2 litres.
I thought that sounds a lot.
Oh, but, you know, you could probably arrange to ship it from Cuba here in case.
You probably would have to pay in duty, import duties, though.
Oh, you think so?
I would think so, yeah.
Oh, damn.
Sorry.
Because they get you out every time.
We do get onto grog on this show quite a lot, which is fantastic. So, because we like to have a drink, which reminds me that you went on the vodka train. Tell us a bit about the vodka train.
The vodka train, yeah. That was the Trans-Siberian Railway. It was Trans-Mongolian Railway, actually, because it went from Beijing to St. Petersburg via Mongolia.
Right.
Yeah, and all up that trip was about 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. Longest stint on the train was from Irkutsk in Siberia all the way to Kazan. 3 nights on the train with no showers.
So, oh, okay.
Right.
Slumming it a bit.
So I was going to ask, what's the accommodation like on the train?
It's not great. Yeah, you're basically in like little four berth cabins.
You're sharing with people you might not know.
Yeah, I did have to. I mean, they try and keep the groups all together, like, so we're all next to each other at least. But there's the possibility you do have to share with some locals. I did on a few occasions. They didn't speak any English, so just pleasant nodding and just a little bit of a wave. But they didn't have much to do with us.
And what's the kind of cost to do that whole trip? Do they provide food for you, or is it?
Well, the way that they worked it was they sort of organise all the logistics of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a honcho in every city that you visit. Mm. And they meet you at the station, take you to your hotel, and then they take you back to the train station later, and they arrange some activities for you in between. But ultimately, your time is your own to explore whatever you want to. Although most people would stick with the group, and it would be recommended to stick with the group. I've got a story about what happens when you stray away from the group, so stick with the group wherever you can.
So you don't spend all the nights on the train? I thought you would spend all the nights on the train.
Oh,
so
no, you'd go crazy.
Right. It's not the GAN, shall we say.
No, definitely not the GAN. You just travel on the train just to get from A to B.
And why is it called the vodka train?
Just a fancy name for it, I suppose. Oh, okay. That was the under 35s version of it.
Is it just because you need to drink a lot of vodka to cope?
There's certainly a lot of that, especially on the dining card as well. Vodka in Russia is incredibly cheap, so you don't want to miss out on that.
Did you stay in one of those tents? One of those tents called in Mongolia?
The Gur camp or yurt.
Yurt. Did you stay in a yurt?
I did stay in a yurt, for 2 nights at one of the Gur camps. I mean, it's not as traditional as you might think, because there's you got the main headquarters where you have your meals, and there's a lot of tourists there as well. But they do actually take you out to some nomads, where you get to ride donkeys and drink their locally fermented yak's milk, I think, or mare's milk or something.
Okay.
Ooh, and did you try that?
Yeah, I did try it. Went in Mongolia, of course.
And how was it?
No good. No, didn't like it, but, it was worth trying it. I went all that way, so I was going to try some fermented mare's milk.
A good travel agent. That's your job.
Yeah, that's right.
Try it and report back.
We love junkets, don't we? On that note, we do have to go to a brekkie break, and this is the Escape Hour, Joy 94.9.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Good morning, Melbourne, and what a pleasure it is to be with you today. January, first month of the new decade, and we are going off here at Joy 94.9. My name's Russ Marston. Stefana's driving us today, and Fiona Brooke, you are a star. You've been to Georgia, and you and Dave are going to chat all about that amazing country.
Well, it is interesting because there were about 10 people that I knew in Georgia all at the same time. My parents had friends that were there, and then I knew some other people, and then somebody else was there. It certainly seems like Georgia is one of the countries of the moment. But interestingly, I was talking to someone who was there recently, and they were going to go back, and they were going to do Azerbaijan, Georgia, and then Armenia afterwards, because apparently you can't do it the other way. You can't go Armenia, Georgia, Azerbaijan, because the Armenians and the Azerbaijanis don't chat, and they're not happy if you can't do it that way. You've got to to Azerbaijan first.
Yeah, that's true. They don't like each other. They're still technically at war, so ceasefires between the two of them at the moment. And if you try and enter Azerbaijan with any evidence whatsoever that you've been to Armenia, they're not going to let you in. They'll ban you for life. But the Armenians are a bit more lenient the other way around, so you can actually enter into Armenia after having been to Azerbaijan.
Right.
And I just break in here to say that, and this is a very good point to say, this is why you book with a travel agent. Good question from you, Fiona. Yeah, and it's, you know, that is something that you could just go off and do willy-nilly yourself and book online, and you could end up not being able to enter the country. So it's a very good reason why travel agents do have the knowledge and you should book with a travel agent.
But what about all those fees, Russ?
Well, there are reason we charge the fees, and I'm glad you've asked. Why do we charge the fees, Dave?
I mean, our time is valuable and you're getting the best advice possible.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a service that's being provided to you. So a travel agent's time isn't completely free. They're always happy to help, but, yeah, it's the way that we make our living. So that advice does come at a cost.
Well, I mean, I know I was trying to get from one island to another island and it was in a language I didn't speak, and I couldn't figure out the little planes from this one and that one, and... You know, I just eventually cracked it, and I try really hard because I like planning, because I'm like got this little inner travel agent and I love planning. However, there are times where I just say, you know, I just got to go to the travel agent because they're going to help me resolve this problem.
Yep.
And it's book interesting. Those random little
bits and pieces. I think it's interesting. What most people don't realise that in travel we do only earn 5% of what you pay us, and it's often not a great deal. So if you've spent $2,000 on an airfare, we will make $100 commission. But then, you know, if you're servicing a customer for a high maintenance customer and you're looking after them for 10-15 hours work, then if you cut that all down, you're really only earning about $10 an hour. And I don't know anyone in any industry that's prepared to work for $10 an hour. So what we do charge the fees because we have the knowledge. Yeah.
And I was going to say, some of the queries, I mean, you do a lot of research and it can take you a lot of hours to come up with something for people. And, and I think you've got a name for people that ask and don't book.
Oh, gosh. What are they called?
Well, we call them tire kickers.
Okay, tire kickers is good. But I can't remember what we call them. Well, I don't think I'm allowed to say, actually.
possibly not.
Better stays behind the phone.
Yeah, we don't like them. I'll put that nicely. No, we send them off to other travel agencies.
It's a lot of hours for nothing, really.
Yep.
And it's
I have a quick question. I did think that travel agents had better deals with airlines. They could buy flights, for example, at discounted rates, and therefore they were making some sort of additional component. But I could be completely misled.
Well, yeah, that's very true. So the deals that you get, they're different depending on where you're looking. Mm. Agents, each different agency can get their own special rates as well. So it's always better to ask a travel agent what they can offer you rather than just go for whatever the cheapest option you see online.
Well, that's right, because cheaper isn't always better.
Definitely not.
And read that fine print. Why should they read the fine print, Dave?
So there's no nasty surprises, definitely, because things can go wrong. If you read the fine print, you're not going to get any nasty surprises.
So did you get any surprises when you were in Georgia? Trying to segue back to the original topic.
In Georgia. So I spent about a week in Georgia. I wouldn't say I got any nasty surprises there. It's quite a beautiful country.
So a week's not very much time. What did you pack into Georgia in that time?
I went out to the countryside and saw some monasteries.
Yeah.
I think Georgia is actually the first or the second Christian country in the world. So there was a lot of very, very old monasteries and old churches there. Mm. And a lot of them it's a mountainous region, and a lot of them are like on cliff tops and just really high in the mountains near the clouds. And just the scenery is stunning.
I saw quite a few monasteries as well. Mm. They are amazing. And some of them you have to walk up to, and some, it's almost like there's a monastery at the end of every walk in Georgia. There's a monastery over there, and then there's another one, and then there's a and then there's a cathedral, and then it was really fascinating. I really loved it.
Yeah, the other good thing about Georgia is the wineries. Some claim that wine was invented there. I'm not sure how true that is, but...
Well, certainly the Georgians do.
Yeah, well, the wine there is just spectacular.
It really is. And also challenging too. Like, if you think you just got to rock up and just drink Aussie-style wine, you will be horribly surprised. So you have to go with an adventurous palate.
Yeah, you do. Yep, not just for the wine, but for all the cuisine that they have there as well.
They do. Yeah. They have a lot of amazing cuisine. I did a cooking class there, which I absolutely loved.
Yeah. Did you make the King Kali, those soup dumplings?
Oh, no, I ate a lot of King Kali, though. Yeah. We didn't make King Kali, but we made a lot of other delicious eggplant dishes. So much fun. And if you were to, go back, where would you like to visit in Georgia that you haven't made it to yet?
I didn't make it to Batumi, which is on the Black Sea coastline. And I've heard very nice things about the stunning scenery there. It's like a temperate beach climate. So, yeah, it's quite beautiful from what I've heard.
Yeah, I'd love to go back to Georgia and do the other side, the Black Sea side, which is like the western side.
Yes, it is.
But there were so many beautiful walks and hikes up in the mountains. Gorgeous, gorgeous country. And Armenia. Tell me a little bit about Armenia, because I haven't been there.
Well, like Georgia, it's an old Soviet country, but I think Armenia probably maintains a bit more of its Soviet heritage, more so than any of the other old Soviet states. Most of the local population can speak Russian, and unlike in Georgia, no one's going to get angry at you for speaking Russian.
Yeah, you don't want to even mention anything to do with the Ruskies.
No,
If you're in a with a driver and there's someone driving in front who has a Russian number plate, of which there's a lot of Russian traffic back and forth, and people that own property in Russia, in Georgia that are from Russia, the Georgians just are not happy with the scene. No. Anything to do with a Russian number plate, they're like, they start swearing.
Well, it's a bit like us with people from New South Wales, really, isn't it?
But Armenia is a bit different. So a lot of the old architecture is very Soviet, and it's almost in a way like going back into the old... along with Transnistria, which is a breakaway region of Moldova, it's probably the most old Soviet-related country in the world at the moment, I would say. It's almost like going back in time to that old era.
How extraordinary.
Yeah.
Now, another place that you two both share as a passion with is Japan, because Dave's off to Japan next year as well.
Love Japan. Just can't go back enough.
Yeah, I love the food. The sake. The people are so friendly and just so... they're almost too friendly, aren't they?
They're really amazing. I just love, just love everything about Japan. And every time I go, there seems like there's a new part of Japan to explore that I haven't been to yet, but I feel like I've been to a lot of places, but actually I've still got so much more to explore.
What places do you recommend, guys, in Japan?
I could easily spend a week in Tokyo, maybe even more. There's that much to do there. I also went to Kyoto, which is the first capital of Japan and probably the medieval capital of Japan. So many awesome temples and castles there. I really, really thought that was exciting.
Yep, I have been to Nagasaki, which was very interesting. It's like an old port town, so it's a bit more ramshackle than both of those other places. I spent some time down in Kyushu, which is one of the sort of far islands, not the Okinawa side, but the other side, because Japan's on a funny angle. So Kyushu is a beautiful, beautiful, not very well visited island by a lot of tourists. It's very scenic. It has lots of beautiful hills and gorgeous walks, and it's relatively untouristed, and there are some beautiful onsen towns down there. So that's a beautiful part of the world to explore as well. And then there's fantastic places, just around and above the Tokyo and Kyoto, with in the Gifu prefecture, and so much more to see.
And not all of Japan is crowded either. There is some islands and beaches down at Okinawa.
Well, I want to go to Okinawa. Mm. It's like Japan Hawaiian style or Hawaii Japan style. I just really want to get there.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
Well, now, I'm sure we've all got a few funny travel stories we could tell. I mean, I can remember going to Korea last year and doing a perfume making course and made my own little bottle of perfume and brought it in here to Joy 94.9 and sprayed it all over myself and made everybody sick. It just didn't survive the trip home, unfortunately. So I actually called it, Sure Fuck, which was the name of the perfume. I'm sure that'll be beeped out, but anyway, we'll see what happens. Dave, what's your funny travel story? You've been to Russia and got trapped by the mafia, I hear.
Oh, that happened to me in St. Petersburg, and I mentioned earlier that you don't want to leave the group, so an important reason why is because you might get caught up in a bit of a mafia scam. What happened was, long story short, I just got way too drunk and got taken away from the group by a pretty lady. she took me into a karaoke bar, and I love karaoke, and I was trying to show off singing the Russian songs that I know.
He's right, he's a good singer.
Yeah, and one drink, lots and lots of vodka shots. And they just kept serving us vodka shots, so I just kept downing them and without realising that they were going to make me pay for them later.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So. And not only were they going to make you pay them, but that pay for it, but they were going to make you pay inflated prices.
Oh, very, very, very much so, yeah. I've heard some horror stories where people get charged about, $3,000 Australian dollars for it. It's a pretty common scam in Russia and Eastern Europe, actually. So you've got to always be wary. I tried to leave and then the door was locked and then the big bouncers were waddling their way over towards me, telling me to settle the bill. And I'm like, well, I didn't actually buy anything, so I don't know what to do here. What eventually happened was...
to sing your way out.
No. I should have tried that, actually. No, they eventually took my phone they made me sign something to say that I would come back the next day to pay the bill and collect the phone. So I put a fake signature on there. I think I put Daffy Duck or something. somehow to find my way back to where I was staying. It was a bit intimidating. I mean, there's a lot more detail to that story. I'm not sure how much time we've got.
So your bill was around about, did you say 500 Australian?
It was roughly around 500 Australian dollars. And in hindsight, maybe I should have just paid it and disputed it with the bank and instead of travelling without a phone, because it's important these days.
Absolutely.
What about you, Phoebe? You got any funny travel stories that you
put
yourself in a bit of trouble?
Yes, I'm sure I do have some funny travel stories. I might need a break just so I can remember which one to tell.
Well, yeah. We've all got them. I think we try our best to just go away on a holiday and have a lovely time, but things do happen.
Well, I mean, going on holidays, you have to expect a certain level of misadventure.
You do.
And I find it distressing when people think that, you know, they're going to get away and then nothing bad's going to happen on their trip, because something bad is going to happen and it's not necessarily going to be that bad.
Well, we might go away. We might go on a break.
And
go away together if you want to. We might go on a break. It's Joy 94.9. This is The Escape Hour and we'll be back in a second.
I was at work.
I was riding my horse.
I was microwaving a watermelon.
My iguanas escaped.
There are lots of reasons why you may have missed your favourite show, but don't worry, because our podcast team has you covered. They'll work through rain, hail and national glitter shortages to bring you the best bits of every show. Visit joy.org.au and click on the podcast tab, or head to the iTunes Australia podcast store and subscribe to your favourite shows for free. Thanks to our podcasters, you'll never feel guilty about missing a show again. joy.org.au.
Melbourne, this is The Escape Hour on Joy 94.9. We're here with Dave from DR Travel and we're talking funny travel stories. Fiona, you've got one and then we might head back to Dave for another. What's your funny travel story?
Well, it was actually in Iran. So it was, I had flown in and got in at some ungodly hour, and I was one of those people that didn't manage to get their visa organised, so I had to get a visa on arrival, which It was surprisingly simple, but I had a great deal of anxiety getting off a plane in Iran with no visa. Mm. Anyway, look, they just sort of point you in directions and they kind of bark at you and order you around, but eventually, of course, you get it and it's all fine. Anyway, so then I left the visa area. It was probably, you know, 3 a.m. and fortunately I ran into some people that I knew who were on the same trip as me, and then we waited for the driver to pick us up. We waited. We tried to find the hotel, but there were two hotels with the same name. Was it in this area or that area? And of course we didn't know, and we waited and waited. And then eventually, I think probably at about 4:30, maybe 5 o'clock in the morning, the guy finds us. He was in the other arrivals hall. And we were like, there's only one arrivals hall in Tehran Airport.
Come on. Anyway, these stories, don't they?
So we got back to the hotel, and it was, you know, getting up to 6, and I knew that the tour, the first thing to do was literally at about 9 o'clock. And they put me into a room, and it was very, very sumptuous and comfortable, and I thought, right, I've got 2 hours to sleep. So lay down, slept for 2 hours, woke up in a complete and utter fog, and decided that I needed to, and I had to move rooms because they'd given me this other room. So they told me the night before I had to move rooms. So in a panic, so I've got to actually get dressed, get ready, have a shower, pack the bag, which I didn't really unpack. Anyway, for some reason, I decided that I needed to press my shirt, which is ridiculous. Like, that's how deluded of sleep I was. I needed to iron my shirt. So I decided that I was going to iron my shirt, and then I called downstairs and said, can you bring up an iron and an ironing board? And, of course, they brought up an iron and an ironing board. But in the meantime, of course, I completely forgot because I'd only been in Iran for one day. I'm standing there in a robe with no headscarf on, and I opened the door, and the concierge, or the man from housekeeping, actually closed the door so he didn't see me, and then pushed the ironing board and the iron through the doorway because he wasn't allowed to see me. I mean, I think I had like maybe even not a robe on, maybe just like a nightgown or something. And
risque.
I remember thinking, oh, that's all a bit weird. And then I felt so guilty and so weird. And then I don't think I even pressed my shirt. I think I was just like, I just have to get out of here. So that was my Iran
hair
story.
Dave, we'll go to you and then to Stefan. What's your other funny story for travel?
Well, one time when I was in Barcelona, beautiful part of the world for those who have been. Barcelona is well renowned though for a bit of nighttime crime near the beach. So, I was with a girl from my hostel, and she was an American girl asking me if I wanted to go for a swim. And I thought, well, you're not really giving me much other option, I don't think, are you? So off we went, took off all our clothes, and then just went diving into the Mediterranean. The water was just lovely at that time, yeah. Oh. And anyway, we're having a bit of a splash and a giggle, and we get back maybe 10 minutes later, and where's all our stuff gone?
Oh, your clothes were gone.
They took everything. They took. They didn't just raid our pockets. They actually took all our clothes. And I was told later that the reason for that is because if you spot them, then you're not going to want to chase after them naked.
Oh,
right.
So they took everything. Fortunately, I left my passport in my bag that day, but took my phone and my wallet, and that caused all sorts of problems later on my travels.
That's bad news.
Had to walk back naked to the hostel.
Oh, my gosh.
About 15 or so minutes away. You can imagine the receptionist's look when we walked in.
Oh, my goodness. That's an insane story.
I was like, I need to replace my room key, please.
Sounds like a dance party in Taiwan, doesn't it? Stefan, how was your story?
Oh, it's not as exciting as that. I mean, it's just
You don't go anywhere naked, do you?
I try not to.
No.
Now that I think about it, I try not to. It was just trying to order food in Japan. So that's what, 12 years ago, I think, I went to Japan, and, you know, you've got this machine where you put the money and you get the tickets, and then you sit down and you get your food based on that. And obviously, I just arrived in Japan. I was a little bit jet lagged as well, going from the UK. And I walk in, sit down, and then this woman starts shouting at me and point at the machine and point. And obviously, I don't speak Japanese, so it was very difficult. And then I finally put it together that I have to put some money in the thing, but it's all written in Japanese. So how do you choose your food when? So in the windows, they are all the
The beautiful, plastic plates. Oh, I love those.
They look good, don't they? They look beautiful with the names. So I would just go out, try to remember the characters, and then go back in, and then, no, I can't see what I wanted. So I go back, and eventually I just pressed any random button and got this cold soba noodle soup. Which
was probably delicious.
Not what I was expecting, so it's not really what... I don't do cold noodles very well, so...
I understand, completely understand. It is like that in Japan, though, because they don't. There's not a lot of English signs around, is there?
Well, there certainly is much more now in Tokyo. Yeah. I mean, in preparation for the 2020 Olympics, they have a lot more English. And also, but when I first went to Japan, there was very little English signage. And I guess one of the tricks that I've learnt over the years is to carry a little business card from the hotel that I'm staying at, so that when you get into a taxi, you give them the business card so they know where to go and they can see it in their own language.
Good idea.
Yeah, no, that's a very good trick for any countries.
It's a very good trick.
I think Georgia probably would be a good trick to use as well.
Absolutely. In Georgia, there's a lot of people didn't speak English and they didn't even use the Latin lettering.
Well, I'm just curious, as you know, Dave wouldn't have had his card, would he?
No, not back then.
No, not with going back to the place naked. Now, I am very curious, is what did the front desk say when you turned up there with no clothes on?
She actually was laughing. I think she'd seen it before.
Had she? Okay, all right.
That sounds a bit common. I mean, of course, you know, on La Rambla in Barcelona is rife with pickpockets.
Right.
Rife with pickpockets. A friend of mine was pickpocketed as he was coming from the airport to meet myself and another friend. We had already got there and we were in the apartment. And it's a funny and strange story. So he'd come from Zurich. And when he got to the airport, he thought, oh, it's a bit hot here. I'm going to take off my socks. So he took off his socks and he rolled his socks up and put them in his pocket. He also had in his other pocket 900 euro.
Oh, dear.
Like, I don't know who carries around 900 euro, but anyway.
That's not a good thing to do.
No, and he was carrying 900 euro in one pocket in a roll and 900 socks in the other pocket. And he was walking down the street, the small laneway off La Rambla. And indeed, what happened was some people came up and had a bit of a chat. Oh, I wanted to make sure he was going somewhere, two of them, one on either side. And he was like, no, guys, mate, I'm fine. I know where I'm going. And then an old man yelled out and said, oh, you've been rolled, or whatever the equivalent might be in Spanish. You've been robbed. You've been robbed. And he felt his pocket and he thought that his socks was his 900 euro. And he got to the apartment and it was all gone.
Now, yeah. I mean, that's not a very good story, but it is a tale that you need to be mindful of. But I think, how do you carry cash then? How do you go about when you travel with your money? What do you all do?
Well, I always would love to know the secret to this, but I use plastic a lot of the time.
I do too. But yes.
So what do you guys think?
Well, for me personally, I've always used plastic and I never withdraw any more than $150 a day cash from any.
Do you go with a little bit of cash when you land? So if you can't get to an ATM, you've got something?
Just a little bit. I also travel with three different credit cards to make sure at least one's going to work there. What about you, Dave? Do you travel with much cash on you?
That's good advice, actually. You'd never want to take too much cash. Just take as much as you think you'll need for that day and no more. If it's like predominantly a cash economy, then just leave it all locked up in your hotel safe and just take what you're going to need for every time you go out of the hotel, really.
Interestingly, Japan is very much of a cash economy. I mean, changing, of course, not so much in Tokyo, but outside of Japan, they use cash a lot.
And then what you'd have to do in a situation like that, if someone stole 900 euro out of you, have to go to the police station, you have to file a police report, then you would come back to Australia and you would make a claim from your travel insurance. And so long as you've got a police report, you can definitely do that.
Hence the importance of travel insurance.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we highly recommend travel insurance.
Would you go out? Would any of you go without travel insurance anywhere? Or
you'd be crazy to go without travel insurance. And these days, a lot of tour operators won't actually take you if you don't have insurance details to give them before you go.
Yeah, I travelled for years without travel insurance.
Nothing ever happened.
Oh, look, you know, I think small things happened, but I was like, well, if I'm stupid enough to leave the laptop computer computer in the suitcase cafe. Then put the suitcase and get anyway. But I did travel for a long time without travel insurance. But I think by the time I hit 35, I went, oh, it's time to wise up. But look, I do have a question. Oh, sorry, Stefan.
No, I was thinking just, you know, if you have a medical problem, I think it's really important in some countries to have that, especially to be able to come back to Australia, to be able to be repatriated, because that costs thousands of dollars. And you can see people fundraising for that on, you know, all those FoundMe crowdsourcing money. You see more and more of this.
This is it. And I think Dave's right. When some countries won't let you in there unless you can prove that you've got travel insurance because they don't want to be lumped with your medical bills. Mm. So.
Now, I always find the tricky thing with travel insurance, actually, and I've got another question here about about credit cards too. With travel insurance, obviously there's quite a lot of providers and they're relatively inexpensive, but how do you compare apples with apples or pears with oranges, and how do you compare if you've got like two or three different, I mean, as a travel agent, travel agencies have recommendations of who they like to use, but like what are the main things that you need to look out for when choosing?
Well, obviously, a travel agency is probably going to recommend their product or the one that they have an affiliation with. Mm. For the most part, they're much of a muchness, but you can use tools like Compare the Market, but always read the product disclosure statement as well to find out if it's the right product for you.
And what about travelling as you get older? Because even though it might not be something that, you know, you might be thinking about right now, it's actually becoming increasingly expensive for older people to travel and get insurance.
So you want to do all your travel before you turn 80, or you're going to pay an arm and a leg for travel insurance?
Oh, before 80? Yeah. Oh, we've still got plenty of time. I was concerned you were going to say once you hit 65. Not that I'm anywhere near 65 either, but...
No. Good.
And when would you decide to go for an annual rather than a trip insurance? How many times would you need to travel a year for an annual policy be better than a trip-by-trip policy? Or do you have any recommendations on that? Or?
Well, it depends on the policy, really. I mean, sometimes you can get better value even if you just travel twice in the same year. But, yeah, normally I'd say probably about 3 or 4 trips a year, then it's definitely worth looking at an annual policy.
I didn't even know you could get that.
Yeah. You can, yep. It's about around about $400 and you can it covers all your trips for 12 months.
Oh, fantastic.
And it is good because in some instances where you're making these trips to places where the coverage is quite expensive, like North America, for example, because going to hospital there is quite expensive, one trip there can be the cost of can cost you $400. So if you get this multi-travel insurance policy, you can keep travelling for the rest of the year and you've got one policy. So. We that really must go and have another cup of coffee and
all this conversation.
Come back to Dave and we're going to finish up our fabulous travel show.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLB, TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Good morning, Melbourne. This is the Escape Hour on Joy 94.9. You're here with Stefan, Fiona and Russ, and we've got a special guest today, our Travel Agent of the Year, Dave Bacco. And Dave, I guess we'll hit straight with the question, I think. I'd like
to
go
straight. Are you going in for the question?
We are going in for the question. Stefan, I think you should
I'm
ask.
I'm going in for the question.
Yep.
Are you are you a roller or a folder?
A roller or a folder?
Yeah. We're not talking about toilet paper.
You're not? Okay.
No. Do you need a little bit more background?
Probably need a bit more of an explanation.
Do you know, when you have a suitcase, a bag, do you roll or do you fold?
Okay, yeah. Look, I tend to do neither. I tend to just scrunch and shove it all in.
Oh, okay.
I'm a stuffer, much to my girlfriend's disgust. She's very much a folder.
So do you travel with an iron?
No, I don't need an iron. What do I need to iron?
I'm going to buy one of those little travel irons as a gift for a friend of mine.
Are you going to keep it?
No. It could come handy in Iran. I won't cause any more embarrassment.
No, not without your burqa on. God. Hijab or whatever they call it. Dave, what's your favourite airline? Which airline gets you going?
My favourite airline is Qantas.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
Are you a Qantas Club member?
I am a frequent flyer, frequent flyer member, not a Qantas Club member.
I always wonder, you know, I really like the idea of going into that room and just drinking free champagne and eating their fruit salads, but I'm not a frequent flyer, so I only ever get in there of the grace of others.
That's right.
Yeah, somebody's well, it's worth signing up, I would say, and there's so many ways to earn points these days with Qantas. Mm. Qantas or Virgin would be the two. Any other airline, not really worth it unless you travel with them regularly, which only business people would.
Right. Now, I believe that with Qantas, for example, you can get not only, of course, you've got those Qantas cards, but there was one where you could get your health insurance connected to Qantas. Mm. Qantas health insurance, for example, and apparently every time you go to the gym, you win points because you're improving your health, which means you'll have to less use their health insurance.
Schemes and scams, and they're not schemes and scams, but you can earn points on just about everything, really.
Yeah, more and more ways to add points every day.
Yeah, but I think you've got to be careful with the data you give these companies because that's a little bit too much for me, I think.
Sure.
I'm really fond of getting points, and I do, but I wouldn't do that just because I don't want them to have my health data, really.
So have you opted out of my health record since you're in the medical industry?
Yeah, I have.
He also
can opt out.
But he also only travels out the front in planes as well.
That's not true.
I only like travelling on the front in planes. I've got a funny plane story. So I had to go to Sydney for business.
Yep.
And I had to catch a taxi all the way to Avalon.
Oh, did you? Exactly. That's a long way, isn't it?
The taxi was like...
Geelong,
the taxi fare cost more than the flight to Sydney. Anyway, and I got there early enough and I got a front seat, like in row one, seat A. Anyway, so it's early in the morning. I'm feeling a bit anxious because I've got this whole day of work that I've got to do in Sydney and I'm feeling a bit anxious. So then I drink lots of coffee and then I have a sweet pastry when I'm at Avalon Airport. And then I get on the plane and I'm feeling quite edgy and then I have another cup of coffee and then I feel a scratch.
Oh.
And I start scratching my hand and then I feel another scratch and then I feel another scratch and then I am scratching literally all over.
What happened?
It's the weirdest thing. And then I start to panic because I've got to go to all these meetings and I'm in my little, you know, outfit. Then I get into this panic. So I rush to the bathroom, take off all my clothes in the tiny bathroom and...
On the plane.
Oh, yeah. And there is this row of bites that goes up my two front, my legs, all the way up over my shoulders and down the other side.
What was it?
And I can't see any bugs. I shake out all the clothes. I've got this row of what look like bites and then I start to hyperventilate and then I realise I've got to calm the down.
Yes.
So I put my clothes back on. I go sit in my seat and I just start deep breathing. I don't know, it was some sort of anxiety attack. Anyway, I got off and the bites were all gone.
Now, look, fantastic story. Dave, we have got about 1 minute left. Have you got any travel tips for us for this travel show that everybody must do when they, you know, obviously book with a travel agent? What else do you recommend?
I would suggest book as much of what you know you're going to do as you can before you leave. A lot of peace of mind. Mm. Yeah.
It's been great having you on our show today. You have been fantastic. Wealth of knowledge.
Great tips.
Thanks
for having
me.
Some fun stories. It's been great. All right, well, that's the Escape Hour for another week. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.